This video will be sponsored by SNHU. So it's 2025 and cybersecurity is still all the rage. Breaches are at an all-time high and so are cyber salaries. But there's a problem you keep running into. Cyber jobs you want to land are requiring a degree and you don't have one. Let me introduce you to today's sponsor, Southern New Hampshire University, SNHU. SNHU has a flexible online program that also touts one of the lowest tuitions in the country. SNHU is an affordable, accredited, nonprofit university that has dedicated career advisors, webinars, internships, and more to prepare you to enter or advance in the workforce. There's a 32% projected growth of information security analyst roles through 2032, and according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median security analyst salary in 2023 was $120,000. In SNHU's program, you can learn about these critical subjects: cybersecurity foundations, networking, incident response, risk management, enterprise security, and more. As a cybersecurity professional, these are all important courses. If you would like to know more about SNHU's program, then please visit snhu.edu/textual or click the link below in the description. This video will be sponsored by... Yo, all right. Sorry for the delay, folks. Well, we are back with our first... This is the first time we've been back in studio, right? This year?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, first time we've been back in studio this year. And it's a Friday that I come to y'all. But before we start, I do want to play something that was funny to me. And we had technical difficulties, guys, so I'm going to play a lot of stuff on my phone today. So let me make sure this all the way up. So listen to this real quick.
Before I got my doctorate, I was working at Best Buy. Yeah, getting that degree was tough. But you know what's harder? Poverty.
I wanted to start with that. But welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm here at HD, and we got our co-host tonight,
Cyber Shorty, in the house.
Episode 163. If you're watching this right now in the live chat, you can throw up a one, but really all you gotta do is hit the like button and share it out so we can get this thing filled up tonight. We're gonna talk about a lot of interesting articles we found. T-Mobile trying to pay out $25K to people who were harmed when they got breached. Then you have the job search process is different, people getting interviewed by AI bots, and it was also an article about people found a Doge people at NASA. And so it's not an article, it's a post. So I'm going to read that too. But yeah, man. So to start it off, I actually want to talk about some shows we've been watching. How many of y'all have been watching Paradise? I don't want to spoil it for nobody.
I haven't, but it's on my to-do list. I've been seeing good things about it nonstop. It's just all been good things. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. People have been saying it's a while. Is it only one season?
Yeah, it got renewed for season two though.
Okay. Yeah. How many episodes? Eight.
I'm assuming season two might have 10. Because it's a lot. They did it good. The pacing was well. It was like every episode would more and more show you something that happened that predated the first episode. Mm-hmm. So that's why I kept you watching. Keep on trying to figure out, well, why did this happen and what happened? So for those of y'all that haven't seen it, I feel like it reminds me of Wayward Pines and Silo. Mm-hmm. I think it reminds me of those two shows. I don't think any other show was like that. Now, I may be off. If I'm missing one, guys, y'all let me know in the comments. So we're watching that. We got Raising Kanan that's back out.
Could never get into it. I tried so many times. Like, and I was making it through the episodes, but it just wasn't keeping me. But everybody said that you just got to keep watching it. But it just wasn't doing it for me. It wasn't doing it for me at all. But it wasn't terrible. It just didn't have me stuck, basically. Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. I like it. You know, the actor that played 50 or Kanan, his 50 impersonation has got better season over season. Mm-hmm. So
I think he's a good actor, and I think they have a good cast.
Like, I don't know, man. I can't wait to watch it because they take the trope starving like Marvin to another level. Every time you see Marvin on Kanan, mm-hmm. he eating something. So it's always funny to me. And I've been trying to catch up on Invincible. I don't know if you watch Invincible or not.
What is that, on Hulu?
It's on Prime. It's a superhero show. I guess it's animated, but it's like not for kids.
I haven't seen them. I've seen, what is it, The Boys?
Okay.
I started it, but I didn't.
It could be like a animated version of The Boys. It's not the same, but it's like gory and they like, you know, it's not, like I said, ain't nothing you really want the kids to sit down and watch, because it's doing a lot. So I don't know, but I know y'all hear us come to rant about that. That may be like some more Patreon type of content. What we first want to talk about is I think, and this is not an article, but it's something I thought about. I posted it on my Twitter. I was like, recruiters get the short end of the stick when it comes to layoffs, like every single time. Like, no lie, it was a situation where I applied to a role that I interviewed for, and I saw it come back open. So I was talking to the recruiter I talked to the last time I was interviewing for it and asked them, hey, you got any, I didn't get any feedback from this role. What's going on with it? Yada, yada, yada. And then they was like, oh, yeah, they sent you some back whatever month. Did you get it? And I didn't get it. And so I reached out to them. We connected on LinkedIn. I was like, yo, I want to ask you something that's not on the company's network just because I want to see, like, you ain't got to answer me, but I'll, like, see if you actually give me some real feedback. Just want to see something. And the next day, I see he had the post open to work. I was like, that was crazy.
I've been seeing that a lot. I've been seeing like the same roles be posted 17 million times. So it's just like, what are you looking for?
No, but I'm not even focusing on that. The fact that he literally was just like this working for them, and he found out like the next day or the next week that he was getting laid off. And he was a really good recruiter. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, I know why they're so expendable, but at the same time, why? There was a post on LinkedIn that we were talking about earlier where the guy was like, hey, why don't those executives that make the millions of dollars, why they don't get laid off because they make the bad decisions versus the 500 people, or no, say the 100 people that make 50K.
Yep.
They're the reason why you're overhired, you're overspent. And now the people that's really doing their jobs like they're supposed to, they wouldn't even make it nowhere near what y'all make. They get stick. They don't get a good severance. All this other stuff. Their insurance runs out. Time, they probably whatever time at the end of the month, and they got to get COBRA. Like, there actually do need to be some type of work laws just in general for workers
when they're getting laid off from some, like, type of severance, whatever. Yeah, policy.
I don't even say a severance policy, but at least like your benefits, right? I think everybody should at least have, like, if you get laid off, you probably should be able to get Medicaid or something like that until you find something else. You shouldn't have to be trying to pay for COBRA or something with your unemployment. And let's talk about it. Unemployment is trash because it's only a certain threshold. Like, I remember years ago when I was unemployed, I think on the 1st or the 15th, whatever it was, I could only get like $900 like every 2 weeks because I made X amount of money. And I was like, man, this is crazy. Why, like, I can't get more than that?
So they cap it at a certain amount? And it's based on your pay. Gotcha.
So for some people, it may be more than, you know, good enough. But other people, I was like, that's when I had to make them tough decisions back then. I was like, rent, car note, which one? Do I want to be sleeping in the car or do I want to be sleeping in my room? So it was those decisions. But I was like, that's just crazy. It always takes me back to the pandemic where you had some people who weren't making, that got the extra 600 with, I'm not going to tell anybody what they deserve to make, but you had people who made more money who didn't even qualify for the 600, but yet they was out of their job. And so, well, no, they was getting the extra 600, but the extra 600 wasn't even helping them pay for bills.
Yeah.
So they got the IRS data, just pay people until they find a job, whatever they was making or something, or 75% of it, or close enough, because it's ridiculous to have to do all the stuff you got to do when you lose a job. That's how I feel.
It is, on top of the stress of knowing that you need to hit the ground running and look for another one. Especially when you got bills piling up, family. Yep, I agree.
Somebody said shorty with the P6000s on. So I actually wanted to talk about, it was kind of some cool stuff. Since we were talking about unemployment, let me see if I still got the article open. Let me see if I'm going to share it or not. Let me see if I can share it. But pretty much it was February's IT job market in the U.S. shows mixed signals, unemployment tick up. If y'all see me moving around, I'm just trying to adjust the screen so I can see with this mic in my face. Let's see real quick. Permit. Let's share this. And let me pick a All right. IT unemployment rose and hiring slowed in February, the second month in a row that's happened. Sluggish might be the best word to describe the IT job market after the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics published its data for February employment today. The data offered mixed signals for U.S. tech jobs, even though the number of tech roles grew, unemployment rose. And while tech companies cut staff, nearly 490,000 job postings were made. So that's close to 500,000 job postings that they did last month. The unemployment rate continued to climb for the IT marketplace to 3.3% in February from 2.9% in January. It was the second month in a row the unemployment rate grew, according to CompTIA. What? That's not CompTIA. That's a CompTIA. I ain't never heard of them. A nonprofit trade association. The numbers represent a dramatic increase in tech unemployment compared with December's 2% rate. Janko Associates, which uses different metrics than CompTIA to determine each unemployment. See, they got an inconsistency right there. Now say CompTIA to determine tech unemployment. Peg February's unemployment rate as much higher, 5.4%, though the number is still down from 5.7% in January. Janko said the number of unemployed IT professionals dropped slightly in February to 148,000 from 152,000 in January. There continues to be uncertainty in the outlook for IT initiatives, said Janko CEO Victor J. A preliminary impact of DOGE is being felt. There go DOGE. As many contracts for IT professionals have been put on hold, and government IT pros do not have a clear picture of what the future holds for them. And that's actually ironic. I was looking at Business Insider, and it was talking about people from, I think, Deloitte. And I don't know if it's KPMG, but some of those big four firms were trying to figure out what was going on with their contracts, those government contracts they were working, especially with DOGE and them sniffing around and messing up everything. So that is sucky. Like, you got outside people who really don't have the clearance level.
Say they don't even have the clearances, which is why.
DOGE stands for the Unofficial Department of Government Efficiency, put in place by President D. Trump. It is being overseen by Elon Musk. According to BLS data, the IT job market shrank by 9,100 positions in early 2025. Economic uncertainty, including stock market fluctuations and concerns over inflation, tariffs, tax cuts, and global conflicts, is responsible for the hiring slowdown, he said. Let's see, this is a long article, but all I was trying to say is the job market is not what it used to be. And I'm actually, let me see if I could find something, because DOGE came up.
Why are you looking for that? Let's laugh. So why did I think it was Dodge this whole time? I've actually just been avoiding even diving too deep into it because it's exhausting, but definitely thought it was Dodge and not Doge. But it's definitely spelled like Doge and not Dodge.
So I found a post on Instagram saying we found a Doge guy at NASA because his Google calendar was public.
Why was his calendar public?
A Doge staffer now walking the halls at NASA maintained a publicly accessible Google calendar revealing his connections to the Trump administration initiative. The names of fellow Doge staffers and scheduled interviews at companies including Tesla, Palantir, and Anduril. Riley Sinnott, 26, is listed as a senior advisor in an internal NASA directory similar to the nebulous titles given to some Doge staff and other agencies. His name and involvement with Doge have not been previously reported. Like many other Doge workers, he deleted his LinkedIn profile and made his X account private in recent months. However, Sinnott did not make the Google calendar link to his personal email address private.
What? So why is he able to use his personal email address for business purposes?
Got a good question.
Yeah, let's start there.
I don't know, to be quite honest with you. I really don't know. I don't even know how they're even set up. Like,
so he must got like a booking thing or something.
It would be interesting, like, if Doge has affected your job, shoot me an email. The email is in the description, and we can unpack it like that. Because I always feel like it's kind of like they're just running like, hey, it's whatever. It's not really professional, like how they're doing any of this stuff.
I agree.
So, yeah, they definitely didn't prepare for this. It was kind of like, oh, okay, cool. We're using our, what they using? Shoot, they probably use a StreamYard links to meet.
But there is a reason why you have, the clearance and certain processes in place to make sure that you are communicating on an approved platform,
mm-hmm.
and not your personal email.
Yep. So I know they're going to flood everybody emails and figure out some type of way to get in contact with those people.
Why did they hide their or delete their Instagrams?
Because they're supposed to be anonymous. You got, I mean,
bye.
Well, I mean, I would too, you know, if I was. Did you want to talk about the cyber crew that stole the Taylor Swift tickets?
I do. Let me find that article really quick. Okay. So the title of the article is Cybercrime Crew Stole 635,000 in Taylor Swift concert tickets. New York prosecutors say that two people working at a third-party contractor for the StubHub online ticket marketplace made $635,000 after almost 1,000 concert tickets and reselling them online. That didn't make sense. As the prosecutors explained, the vast majority of stolen tickets were for Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. However, the criminals also targeted other high-value and high-profile events, including Ed Sheeran's concerts, Adele concerts, NBA games, and the U.S. Open Tennis Championships. The two defendants, 20-year-old Tyrone Rose and 31-year-old Shamara Simmons, worked for Sutherland Global Services in Jamaica and stole the tickets by allegedly intercepting approximately 350 StubHub orders by exploiting a loophole in the platform of an offshore ticket vendor. The Sutherland employees, defendant Tyrone Rose, and unapprehended accomplice allegedly used their access to StubHub's computer system to find a backdoor into a secure area of the network where already sold tickets were given a URL and queued to be emailed to the purchaser to download. Rose and his co-conspirator redirected the URLs to the emails of co-conspirators Shamara Simmons in Queens and a now deceased accomplice who lives in Queens. The investigation is still ongoing, with prosecutors trying to determine the extent of this operation, including other potential co-conspirators yet to be discovered. The Sutherland employees were arrested in New York City and arraigned on Thursday on a criminal complaint charging them with grand larceny in the second degree, first degree computer tampering, fourth degree conspiracy, and fourth degree computer tampering. If found guilty, they face a potential maximum sentence of 3 to 15 years in prison if convicted of the top count. According to the charges, these defendants tried to use the popularity of Taylor Swift's concert tour and other high-profile events to profit at the expense of others, District Attorney Katz added. This takedown highlights the vigilance of my office's cybercrime and cryptocurrency unit, as well as the importance of working with our industry partners to combat fraudulent activities and ensure the protection of consumers. Not Tyrone in...
you better call on Tyrone. That's all I can think about. You said Tyrone.
Not Tyrone. And what's her name? Shamara done got caught, child.
Why would they reroute it to their personal email addresses?
How was they able to even reroute it? Let's start there.
Seemed like they need a job.
Why? They're absolutely very smart. Clearly very skilled. But why were they able to do that? And why is that the process for someone to get their ticket? Why does it have to be queued? Because that's just giving it another opportunity. It should be more
automated.
Exactly.
That's a good question. That's a supply chain issue.
A little tie-tie. Oh, and they were young, 20 and 31. Who got who to do it?
I think they might get in trouble, but they might say, hey, how y'all did this? And either hire them or somebody gonna hire them. Because that be happening to hackers sometimes. They're like,
I be seeing that happen a lot of the times out this country. I be seeing, like, in Europe, they do that a lot. Try to rehabilitate them and teach them how to do it for good versus condemning them for doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I was like, man, old Tyrone, man.
635,000.
They didn't even get to enjoy the money. But the thing is, they knew they was going to get caught.
Who
stuff
was
like
the person
that
flagged. Died? That's what I want to know.
Hey, they did that. See, but you did watch Power Book 2 Ghost, right?
Yeah.
That's the Tariq spinoff.
Oh, yeah. Ate that up.
So, you know, when Zeke said, I'm going to have to tell what I know. That's what the third person said. I'm going to have to tell what I know.
No, like, because why are they dead? Is that a part of the crime? Do they kill him?
man, I don't know. I want to talk about some different stuff of why, you know, I like my Google Pixel. First of all,
boo, I'm just kidding.
First of all, when it says, hey, suspected to be spam, I have an AI assistant because I did.
Wait, like a text or a call or both?
Both. When it's a call, it will say, hey, this may be spam. I can have the AI say, hey, I'm answering the phone for so-and-so. What do you need? And a lot of times the spam people hang up.
What
if it's somebody else? I can see the live transcription of what they're saying, and if I want to pick up and talk to them or not. So it's been doing that. Google had that functionality for like the last couple of years now in these phones. But
does it do that AI message if it's like, can you set it up for someone that's unknown or for all calls, or like how do you set that up? Configure
it's automatically kind of implemented, and you can choose to turn it on or off.
Gotcha. But that would still be if they're leaving a voicemail, though, right? Or is it answering the phone?
It's literally talking to them. So if you called me and I didn't want to answer, I can use my AI to talk to you live. And you say, hey, I got to tell you something important. I can answer. And it's going to say, okay, he's joining the call.
So are you texting?
No, it's prompts.
Gotcha. And you just click it?
Yeah.
Wow. I ain't going to hate on that. That's kind of cool a little bit.
Let me see. Let me close this out. So Google takes the battle to scammers. The new groundbreaking feature for Android and Pixel phones. Let me see if it'll let me make this picture big. I don't feel like doing it. But anyway, it also got the functionality where if you are texting somebody who's maybe a scammer, it will say this is most likely a scam. And you can block them and put them in the spam category and report the number.
I want to know more about what does reporting a message, and I could probably look it up, do for an iPhone, because I reported a thread and then 10 minutes later got another message from the same number. So like,
it's probably a queue. Like, I know, like
I'm fed up. Take me off the list, Lord.
Hey, listen, first of all, you know how many people the scammers almost got were saying, hey, you got to pay your toll bill?
With the pictures that they were sending.
Oh, they were sending people pictures?
They were sending pictures. They were sending, like, it wasn't even coming to you as a picture that you had to open. It was already like, you know how you just would regular send somebody a picture. Mm-hmm. It was coming through that same way, but it looked extremely janky. It looked like AI made the picture type of situation.
I'm going to leave here with something. Google gave us a nice surprise today by announcing the rollout of two new features designed to catch scams that unfold during phone calls and texts. Not just at the start, these tools use AI to look for red flags as you're talking or texting, which is important because scammers are getting better at tricking people over time. Now, this is an AI feature that is truly helpful and we can all get behind, which I kind of already explained at a high level. Previously thought, perhaps delayed, the scam detection features were initially previewed at Google I/O last year, leaving both attendees and those watching at home in awe of this potential. We have all witnessed how aggressive scammers are getting these days, constantly coming up with new ways to take advantage of unsuspecting victims. They might pretend to be from a company you trust or trick you into sharing personal details, often resulting in emptying your bank account or stealing your identity. To fight this, Google teamed up with banks to learn about the latest tricks the scammers use. They found that many scams now happen through conversations where people are slowly manipulated, so they built AI that can watch what's happening and warn you if things get suspicious. And that is the key. Even when it comes to working in the corporate environment, if they're legitimate, they can over time just start talking to you. And if you're replying back, they're not sending nothing just yet. Their way in is going to figure out, okay, what do you do at the company?
Is so this like a ping?
They email you.
Oh, okay.
And they may be trying to say, okay, let's see what they got on their signature. So your signature is going to tell your title. So a lot of times they're trying to figure out who controls money and payments. And so when they find that out, they'll find a way how they can take over somebody's identity, preferably that person. They will set up a typo squatted domain. Well, so where it looks just like the domain, and they will hijack the conversation. So you'll think you're still emailing the person. So it is important on the mail administrators to make sure they have external and all those different things.
It's very easy to set up. Mm-hmm. And most all companies have that capability for you to set that up. And a lot of them have like the ability to notify you, you know, like, this is your first time communicating with this person, or it'll say something like, this looks like someone you may have communicated with in the past, but it's not them.
Yeah.
So it's still giving you some of those tips to make sure that you are being cautious before mm-hmm. you're interacting.
And like some of the tools, like a proof point, for example,
yep.
has a, like, of course, the regular proof point, but then it has this functionality called a proof point tap, where it's just using this AI machine learning to determine if something is a threat or not. And so it may say, this is an unfamiliar sender.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
And so it'll do something like that and check it on the back end. But sometimes it doesn't catch it. So in this case, they would take over the conversation and say, yeah, I'm the, well, they,
when the
they,
AI will take over.
No, not the AI. Well, I'm just talking about what the attackers do.
Okay.
Let's say, for instance, you work for Baskin and Robbins, and you normally talk to Jimmy for whatever y'all got to do for promotion. Well, Hacker B is over there, and he's already compromised Jimmy. So he's impersonating Jimmy and looking at what y'all been talking about. Now he's made a fake email that looks like Jimmy's, jumped in the conversation talking back and forth to you. And now he's going to potentially try to get you, oh, yeah, hey, change the stuff to this. But that's also be a process thing. Before any changes should be made to any type of account, it should go to the higher-ups. And so they can call somebody and say, hey, did you guys – want us to change the account to this? And then that's how you can do it. So you always got trust but verify. But back to this article real quick. For text messages, if the AI sees something fishy in your text, it'll pop up a warning. You can then choose to ignore it or report the scammer. This works automatically for text from people not in your context. However, it's designed to keep your private messages private, with the AI doing its work right on your phone. This will work for SMS, MMS and RCS messages alike, and will be turned on by default in the Google Messages app. However, it can be disabled by turning off spam protection, which scam detection is part of. The feature will launch first in English, US, UK, and Canada. However, Google says it will be expanding to more countries soon. Let me see if that's the internet. But yeah, I don't know if they can see that, but it's probably real small, but it says likely scam right there. The same idea applies to phone calls. If someone tries to get you to give them a gift card or act strangely, the AI will alert you with sounds and a message on your screen. This feature is optional as phone calls are more personal. Again, everything happens on your phone, so conversations stay private. The feature was tested during a limited beta using Gemini Nano on Pixel 9 devices, which Google says has been a success. Now Google is expanding this beta to include all English-speaking Pixel 9 and newer users in the U.S. So, yeah, I did want to just briefly talk about that because I thought that was pretty cool, especially since, you know, the phone that I share and have. And I was just thinking about something funny. The gift card stuff. When you watch the, what's his name? The scammer payback guys and all those guys. You ever seen them on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're acting like an old lady with the voice changer. Mm-hmm. And then they're like scamming them, or they're taking their money. Like, because they have a big call center. Pretty much what
that movie,
The Beekeeper, was about.
I was just going to say The Beekeeper, yep.
Yeah, so that was
actually crazy to see it like that. I mean, I've seen it on YouTube, but in the movie, to see it from their perspective was crazy.
Man, I think they did some little overkill, but so, you know,
the countdown and we got this much money and keep like,
yeah, that was kind of,
yeah,
the scammer. I think the scammer payback guy, he's the one that will hack in and open people's webcams and you can actually like see into the call center and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've definitely seen him. And then they get scared and they all start surrounding the person who's on the phone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I know, like, one of my old coworkers, Shiva, he knew how to speak their language. So, like, one scammer called me and I was just like, we was just listening to it. And then so he started talking their language, like, yo, why you scamming, man? He was like, yeah, the dude's really not a bad guy. He's trying to pay for school and do all this other stuff. I was like, man, I don't care. Don't take my money. Like, scam the people. Scam drug dealers or something. Don't scam me. But we already talked about the Doge thing. I need to see what this link was about. But go ahead and talk about the... That might be a good one. The YouTube AI-generated video of the CEO.
Perfect. YouTube warns of AI-generated video of its CEO used in phishing attacks. So YouTube warns that scammers are using an AI-generated video featuring the company's CEO in phishing attacks to steal creators' credentials. The attackers are sharing it as a private video with targeted users via emails, claiming YouTube is changing its monetization policy. Yikes. So kind of believable, right? We're aware that phishers have been sharing private videos to send false videos, including an AI-generated video of YouTube CEO Neil Mohan announcing changes in monetization. The online video sharing platform warned in a pinned post on its official community website. YouTube and its employees will never attempt to contact you or share information through a private video. If a video is shared privately with you claiming to be from YouTube, the video is a phishing scam. Ironically, the phishing emails also warn that YouTube will never share information or contact users via private videos, prompting the recipients to report the channel sending the emails if they look suspicious. The description of the video linked in the phishing emails asks those who open it to click a link that brings them to a page where they're asked to continue monetizing their content and accessing off features by signing into their account. However, this page is designed to steal their credentials instead. The scammers also create a sense of urgency by threatening that their accounts will be restricted for 7 days if they fail to confirm compliance with the new rules. Why would it be restricted for 7 days? That's such a
because weird... they're trying to. It's the same thing. So I've been getting this fake scare tactic, fake support for Meta message for my like my textual consulting Facebook page. Talking about you violated terms, yada yada. I said that's not how Meta operates. Not send me something through Messenger.
What else we got? So it says these restrictions would allegedly include uploading new videos, editing old videos, receiving monetization, and receiving earned monetization funds. After entering their credentials, creators are told their channel is now pending and to open the document in the video description for all the necessary information. YouTube users have been receiving such emails since late January, while the YouTube team says it began investigating this campaign in mid-February. YouTube was warned to not click links embedded in these emails as they will likely redirect them to phishing sites that attempt to steal their credentials or infect them with malware. Many phishers actively target creators by trying to find ways to impersonate YouTube by exploiting in-platform features to link malicious content, the company added. Please always be aware and make sure not to open untrusted links or files. However, many creators have already fallen victim to these attacks, reporting that the scammers hijack their channels and use them to broadcast live cryptocurrency scam streams. YouTube provides tips on avoiding and reporting phishing emails in its help center and more details on similar phishing pages. Since August 2024, YouTube has also provided a new support assistance to help users recover and secure hacked YouTube accounts after getting hacked. Well, at least they got a little something going on, a little assistant to help you. Because I know, like, when people use or lose, like, their Instagram accounts, it's a joke trying to get it back.
And I actually, just funny enough that you had this article, so I just talked about this on Twitter. I want to share this tab real quick. So this is actually how the message looks that they send you. I have it, I already reported as spam, but they try to make it like it's a YouTube video. But there's a lot of things that's wrong with it. So I actually, the link that's in here, I took and put it into my disposable browser. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely not no link to no real like YouTube
video. Oh, it's not.
No.
It says it's linked to studio.youtube-plus.com.
Yeah. And so also, another thing is, why would this be a private video? New notification, like all this stuff, like it wouldn't immediately go here. You can see it in your notifications in YouTube Studio. YouTube Studio will pretty much notify you on any change like that. Number two, what was something else I thought about when it came to this? Oh, so this is a big. Don't have like whatever you want to use for your business email. Don't make that the same email that your YouTube channel was on. So it's a failover. So they'll try to send whatever email they send on your description, thinking that's connected to your YouTube channel. And by that method, they think they make it access. Now, granted, in a lot of these things, if you don't enter something, they do have the more sophisticated people that can steal your YouTube session token and then get in that way, even if you had MFA in. So they're always thinking of something, trying to get people's channels and stuff. But they try to be real slick with it. The fact that these people sent this to me three times, like back to back to back, was just crazy.
You didn't hear them the first time. That's why.
I was like, please. But that was hilarious to me. Let me see, this time I got a mob block now. Suk Typhoon. Let me see what this is really quick. If it's something I want to discuss. Oh, that's the one I was talking about. When it says, can someone explain to me why more companies don't lay off the executives making millions who made all the bad decisions first instead of 100 employees? So, yeah, we covered that one. So, I actually wanted to talk about one thing we talked about with the AI interviews. Remember, we was looking at the Reddit post earlier.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it again. So, in the video, guys, the person had a whole interview with a pretty much AI chatbot. And the crazy thing is, it can't respond instantly to what it said. It had to process it slower than a human would. So, it already makes the conversation feel unnatural. To me, it reminded me of the one way, hey, we need you to do a video interview. Send in your responses to these questions. That's what it reminded me of. And nobody does that well on those things. Like, those things, to me, are set up for you to fail.
It's definitely very unnatural and awkward.
But I think this could be something recruiters should pay attention to. It's like, hey, companies are looking to be cheap as much as possible. And eventually, they're going to say they don't need you. Which I think eventually most people...
Putting that in the trust of an AI assistant is crazy.
But the thing now that we talk about is, if you do that, you run the risk of saying, because they'll try to say, well, with AI, it's not biased because it's not a human, so it's just listening to your answers. But you can train your AI model on either what it want to hear or whatever. So there still could be some biases amongst AI, which, you know, if you use AI against certain subjects, there's a bias there and doesn't report right. Yep. So that is a slippery slope, using AI and that functionality. I really wouldn't suggest that, because for me, a person that takes interview processes, like, I actually pay attention to, like, how they're talking to me, how they greet me, how they treat me. Those things means a lot.
I was just about to say, because even as the person that's being interviewed, you don't even get to gauge the people that you potentially would be working with, the culture, you know, you don't get to gauge any of that. You might get thrown into the wolves. You still have discretion at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it's like, okay.
Because you could be like, oh, no, this ain't. I don't like the way y'all talking to me. Or you're not being serious as an interviewer, you know?
Yeah. Now, I did feel like that was part of a screening. But even then, it's just different. Like, I'm one of the few people, like, retail, and this is like a change subject, but retail places and all these big stores need to probably go back to 2 or 3 self-checkouts. We don't need all these self-checkouts, and now you don't got no cashiers. And
first of all, why y'all got 15 or less signs up here, but you ain't got nobody on the register?
Nobody on the register.
I'm going to go up here with 16, 46, 102 things in my cart because I'm not going to get in line, and the line is bent around the corner and down the aisle because it's 2 people on the register.
The biggest scam is we paying more for groceries and scanning them and bagging them ourselves.
That part right there.
I feel like
and some stores charging you for bags.
Yeah. I was like, this ain't Save a Lot.
It's definitely giving Save a Lot.
I'm like, listen.
But at least they had good bags.
No, Save a Lot did not have good bags.
Save a Lot did. Those thick bags.
They wasn't good.
But they better than them Walmart bags.
Man, them Walmart bags are so cheap now.
I'd be double bagging.
Man, we got a whole thing of them. Since so like, cause it'd be hard to even take the bag apart. It'd be apart, so cheap.
Yeah, it'd be so thin.
I'm know. Like, bro, like, they want to be skimp on everything, yet the prices of everything raised. Yeah, you waiting in the self checkout line, it take you forever to check out because they don't have a conveyor.
And then
belt.
They got the nerve enough to want to see your receipt before you leave.
Hey, I don't even know why they got door greeters anymore.
Well, I feel like if y'all gonna do it like Sam's do it, I think I was at a Walmart recently, and they actually were, you know how they do it at Sam's where they scan it.
They don't even know, but these people don't know everything you got in your bookie.
They scan about 3 things. All right, that look good. And
they don't even scan nothing.
But my thing is, at least if you're gonna stop me, you better be scanning something. Don't stop me to look over this receipt because you don't even know what's in these bags. Right. And I don't have time for that.
The real asset protection people work in the back and they're looking at the cameras anyway.
Yep.
If somebody wanted, I just most of the time I just stop because a lot of times that'd be a job for old people and I'll be showing them respect. But truthfully, there's nothing you could do. Like, if I wanted to, I go get some
bum rush pass them.
Man, you can go to deli and get some ham and then take clothes and market as ham, like if you want to. Like all different types of stuff, people should do that. But if it's
You know who don't play? Target.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Target ain't playing with y'all. Target is not playing with you.
I used to work
there. Target, it might as well come on the camera while you at the self-checkout and say, put that back. Yes. Because they are the camera, you feel watched, as you should, but you feel watched in that self-checkout at Target.
Oh yeah, the self-checkout, but not only that, so asset protection, what they're looking for is like, hey, if somebody comes up there with a cooler, a bag, or like a suitcase, unzip
bucket,
it.
Yep.
Because people will steal, they'll put stuff in the cooler, and if you ain't thinking, you just scan the cooler and they didn't got $200-$400 worth of like groceries inside the cooler. I don't work there no more. They had people that would go in there. They want to replace the stroller. They'll take the stroller out. And then
the stroller is crazy.
Yeah. Car seats, everything. Huge. Think about it. You
really putting it in what?
Think about this now. If you work in security or something, you're not paying attention. Who finna stop somebody that stole a new car seat that got a baby in it?
Oh, I get what you're saying. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
And now you just got this old car seat in the store sitting around. That's hilarious.
Let me see.
I also think about, you know who else don't play? CVS.
Really?
They're not playing. Wait, CVS or Walgreens? One of them. When I was in school, was it CVS? One of them stores. I can't remember. But when I was in school, I took a physical security class, and we talked about how basically all of their security systems, they're routing obviously to some central location, mm-hmm. but they take it very seriously. Target Junior.
Man, but I was like, nah, man. Eggs and everything. Like at this point, if you shop at Walmart, they need to be sending you a check on the 1st and the 15th. Or whenever they pay, because I work for y'all too. If I'm scanning and bagging my own stuff. And then, you know, if you work at Walmart, ain't nobody coming out to ask you, hey, do you need help finding something? Better find it on your own.
They don't even be knowing where the stuff is at.
They don't do no work. Like, if you have to work the self-checkout thing, all you doing is somebody trying to buy some wine or something. No, you got to look at their ID.
All they doing is saying cash or card. That's all they doing and pointing you to the right direction.
Man, that's crazy. Do I have this one up? Now, let's talk about a fun one. It's about, let me share this real quick. If y'all still rocking with us right now, put a one in the chat. And like I said, share it out. And also, while we just impromptu, if you're in the chat right now, how would y'all enjoy an actual live in-person show? Like where we live and we bring in certain guests in the city or that's known in the tech industry or whatever they do. And they come chop it up with us live. We like have music and we do some little fun games or something on stage. Like what y'all feel about that? All right, bear with me, y'all.
Which one you looking at?
The one that we both was going to discuss. Since you already read it, I read a little bit of this one. But this is a one that I can agree with to an extent, but I also know what it takes to get hired and why people are possibly not getting hired or getting a nod. Cybersecurity, not hiring them like hotcakes. Like they once was. Ghost positions, HR, AI, no help. So let me do this so y'all can see this thing better too. It's a familiar refrain in the security industry that there is a massive skills gap in the sector. And while it's true, there are specific shortages in certain areas. Some industry watchers believe we may be reaching the point of oversupply for generalists. And I agree, because now people have specialized skills. They are actually rolling two and three roles into one now if you look at job descriptions.
They absolutely are. It's 4 to 5 to 6, for real.
And so now you're like, hold on, I got to know how to do this. This wasn't originally part of this thing, whatever. So it is turning to that. And I will say, if you start your career off as, like I have people that start off like, sysadmins or tech support, which could be beneficial because my sysadmin clients have cloud experience, they get vulnerability management experience, they get security engineering experience. So now, whichever way you want to take your career to, we can say, okay, boom, let's pop for this vulnerability manager role, security engineering. I got my client today who sent me his official offer letter, and he's supposed to be starting the 24th of the month. So that's what we did with him. I think that's a $21,000-$22,000 increase. I was like, pays to invest in yourself. But we'll talk about that later. It seems every year there's another warning about shortage for security talent. The first warning we found on the register is from 2009. Yet lately, this report has run into more and more people in the field who are recounting that even getting an interview can be tough. And I agree. And then certain companies, don't even start trying to apply to certain companies where you can't even get an interview because they probably get either a massive influx of people applying to jobs or whatever it may be. I think the people who say that are applying to all the big name companies, and that's why they're having a hard time. That's one. Of course, bad resume. Bad resume. Y'all try to do too much on the resumes. Like,
I think it also do too much in not doing enough. Not telling a good story about your skills.
No good story. And just waiting on the job to hit you back up. I just sent out a newsletter and also made a LinkedIn post about one of my pet peeves is a recruiter will say, hey, I'm hiring for such and such job. Here's the link. And people will just comment on a recruiter's post, I'm interested. Fam, they're not going to reply if like 5,000 people just said, okay. I'm interested.
Yeah.
What you want me to say? You want a cookie? Tell me why I should even pull your rec.
Or say something, you know.
So like a lot of people are so reactive in the job search, that's why they're not getting hit up. Because you can, if you can find the right recruiter to reach out to, you can fast track yourself to at least getting a screening. Like at least getting a screening. Now, if you ain't getting past the screening, then it may be a skills issue, or sometimes the recruiter is butchering that screening process. During COVID, there was huge hiring. Then after that, the company said, oh my gosh, we have too many people. We need to do some downsizing. And what happened then was a lot of very talented tech people were laid off and began flooding the market in all sorts of areas and began trying to reposition themselves. The problem is also exacerbated by the latest generation of AI products coming onto the market. Mikhail explained, not just in security, AI agents now routinely make decisions about a person's resume, and many applicants lack the skills to game, set software, and bag the interview, which is what we were talking about earlier with the AI possibly biases and passing over people. And that's also something that I said I found out that Workday is fighting the case about their biases and diversity and looking for certain applicants. Like, I always do tell people, even though we have a consult, I'll tell them straight, I was like, listen, honestly, I don't know why it's so hard to get a job. Like, we got to do so much that people used to have to do back in the day, but It is what it is. There's also the problem of ghost jobs, bedeviling recruitment websites, she added. The majority of HR people surveyed and multiple studies report filing job adverts for positions that don't exist. Reasons vary from trying to give the impression the business is growing to both insiders and onlookers, and to motivate staff to work harder because they think they are replaceable.
Bye.
That's a dirty game.
It's a dog eat dog.
You got ghost jobs. You got, and while we're at it, let's talk about the scam job applications. If you apply to a job and they send you an email and they tell you to fill out one of like 15 questions and you answer them, they talking about, are they going to offer you and it's going to be too good to be true? And they talking about, hey, they're going to wire you the money.
Wire you the money is crazy. What? Immediately, no.
They're going to already say, hey, I'm going to send you a check to buy your equipment. That's always the scam play.
Send me a check?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And somebody going to fall for that too. Right. In half.
According to the data on the market from CyberSeek, a partnership between the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Computing Technology Industry Association, and recruitment consultant Lightspeed, the number of security vacancies peaked in 2022, and the number of people working in the sector has plateaued.
I would have to agree.
Yeah, that's something me and Lee talk about a lot. I talk to other people a lot. Like, what happened is they started lumping other roles and saying they were cyber roles, but they were other facets of IT. And there is a skill gap, I will say, but it's not as massive as they kind of making it seem to be to me in my experience. And it's also a gap because they are gatekeeping the gap.
Yeah.
A lot of people could do the work. And there are industries that are still untapped yet that will need the workers. I see a lot of these industries like, so I'm not going to say too much about Paradise. Just know one of the things that happened in Paradise is what people focus on now when it comes to energy grids and everything else, when it comes to physical security of keeping the country safe from that type of attack service. So all these different things don't have the manpower to really successfully defend it just yet. And it's going to happen, especially as we start going more and more AI digital, you're going to have people doing security for Internet of Things, smart cities, smart cars, all these different things. They're going to have their own cybersecurity divisions pretty soon.
I think that another something, just what you said made me think about is the security of data centers too, and how insanely heavily they're targeted. And what are we doing about that besides the standard things? But what can we do to make the security of that environment better? Because that's where the grand mine of data, things, everything you can want is in that data center.
Well, when I worked for Income, our data center was downtown. And you had to get a badge, and I think you had to walk through a man trap and some other stuff. So you couldn't just really get in.
Google has 7 layers of security to get in their data center.
I bet.
Yeah, I see. It's actually a really dope video on YouTube about it.
That would be a good field trip.
Yeah.
Some Miss Frizzle type stuff. Let's see. Where are we?
To cert or not to cert.
I thought we was right here, the most in-demand skills.
Yes, right above that. Yep.
Okay. The most in-demand skills are oversight and governance, which is mostly suited to more experienced practitioners. Florida, California, and Texas remain key job markets, although Virginia is also high on the list, as are Maryland and New York. So y'all see, Texas is a place to move to work in cyber. To cert or not to cert? That is the question. Experience in the field is by far the most attractive things for employers, Mikhail told us. Yet, qualifications are useful in both demonstrating knowledge and getting around automatic HR filtering systems. A CompTIA Security Plus certificate is de rigor these days, and being a certified information systems security professional, CISSP, doesn't hurt either. And without them, HR software would be in an application for a cybersecurity role almost without fail, she said. But once you actually get an interview, certificate collections are less important than practical experience and a more formal education.
What is so insane is yes, immediately. Absolutely. First of all, I get so angry when I see CISSP listed as a requirement for entry level roles. What? Who wrote that rec? Somebody clearly who doesn't know what this, you can't even get it as an entry level person. I think you have to have 5 years of experience.
5 years, yeah. And I forgot how many domains or one domain, and somebody got a
like vouch for it, basically
support for you to take it. That part. I mean, now technically,
you can get it.
No, that's not what I'm gonna say.
What
job search process is about finesse. If you know your stuff and you just you say you got the certs, they not gonna probably ask you unless it's government if they're gonna be active or not. So if you gotta do what you gotta do, do what you gotta do. I'm just gonna leave it at that. Our research indicates that cybersecurity professionals are finding other educational and experience opportunities more valuable when landing a job in cybersecurity, said Andy Woolno, Executive Vice President of Corporate Affairs at International Information Systems Security Certification Consortium, IC2. Our 2024 research found that 19% of professionals entering the field for the first time first prioritize a bachelor's or post-bachelor's degree in cybersecurity or other related field. 16% received a cybersecurity certification and 4% got a cyber internship. And surprisingly, 0 of the 7,000 plus respondents got an apprenticeship before landing a job in cybersecurity.
What's the difference in apprenticeship to you don't get paid?
You do get paid in an apprenticeship.
What is it? What's the difference between that and an internship?
I would say the biggest, and I could be wrong, somebody can correct me in the chat. I believe an apprenticeship, you don't have to be in school to do it. Because most times,
got you. Yeah,
internships are geared for school most of the time.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say. Woolnough told the Ridge, there has been a tendency for those recruiting security professionals to ask for a lot of experience and offer not much in the way of compensation, which turns off many applicants. He recommended that when recruiting new team members, HR should sit down with existing security staff and work out realistic requirements.
Immediately, yes.
Overall, Woolnough still sees demand for more cybersecurity staff, but budget cuts have led to shifting patterns of hiring, and many potential employers are betting on AI as a low-cost way to plug the gaps among generalist security staff. 9 out of 10 companies IC Squared surveyed said they had an incomplete security team with skill holes in some areas. While the full impact of AI is still unknown, we are hearing that hiring managers are not rushing to hire specialized workers, instead preferring generalists who can cover a range of areas while managers figure out what skills would be most beneficial to meet future demand. He also said it's worth noting that most of the skills needed for entry-level jobs aren't technical. Problem-solving, communication, analytical thinking, and critical thinking are all skills that come from fields outside of just cybersecurity. For junior-level staff, it is more important to find those with the aptitude to succeed in cyber rather than focus on unrealistic experiential requirements and train them up to take on lower-level tasks to free up senior staff for advanced work. I agree. Because when it comes to all those skills that he named that weren't technical, that's where diversity comes to play on a team. That's why it is beneficial to get somebody that, oh, they used to probably work in supply chain. This person used to work in retail, pharmacy, whatever, telecom. But they all bring various skill sets that could focus on something that somebody who's been in the same industry may not see. And that's the benefits of actually having a diverse team. And that's one of the things I think I reported on when it came to cybersecurity, when I wrote an article on it a while back. I might need to reshare that joint. It was a decent article that I wrote. It was pretty cool. He noted that there are some notable skill gaps by industry segment, in part driven by tech trends. For example, manufacturing and critical infrastructure firms are currently facing a shortage of specialists in operational technology after a spate of attacks. And government and education sectors need more zero trust experts. I'm just laughing about zero trust because people, how they coin like zero trust.
I hate that it became a marketing term instead of what it actually is.
One area where Mikhail and Woolnough definitely agreed was that networking is absolutely key in the security field. Succeeding in the job market is increasingly about who you know as much as what you know. Not as facts, though. Hey, everyone. First time seeing you on live. I'm going to share some of these. What's called? Yeah, they fall. They don't fall for it, but some of them might.
Somebody said OT security. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's Gabe. Shout out to Gabe, man. And guys, we would have had the panel tonight, but like I said, we had these unforeseen circumstances, so we didn't want to bring people up and then not do what it need to do. But next time we got y'all. But yeah, Gabe is a master in all that OT stuff. And that's why Gabe got to come back down to Dallas so we can actually redo his episode, because we did one like 3-4 years ago. And so we need him again. And if y'all don't
pull
know
up on us, Gabe, pull up on us.
Right. And if y'all not familiar with Gabe, he runs the Struggle Security. Struggle Security like channel. YouTube channel, yeah. Where we're struggling in cybersecurity. So
keeping it real.
Yeah. It's funny though, because I'm gonna mess with him because I know that me and him laugh about like O'Shea and stuff like that. So that definitely seemed like a
he said it'll be in Dallas in May.
Hey, set it up. You know you got my number and I can send the link. We could do it. So I thought that was an insightful article, though.
It was. And it was funny. We both picked it. Hilarious.
Right. And for y'all to know, like, when we do these, we'll have a document and we'll put articles we want to talk about. A lot of times, we will have some of the same ones that we picked. But in this specific time, I tried to pick some stuff outside of just what we typically talk about, just because I wanted to talk about like some different stuff to maybe appeal to a wider audience. I think the only one I ain't talk about is the Sip Typhoon joint.
I got two more.
You want to bring up, let me see, you got some cool ones. I think that one for the kids, that smartphone joint for the kids, maybe what we need.
It's a short little article too. Okay, so safety first, smartphone for children unveiled. A new smartphone has been unveiled that is designed to keep children safe through extensive built-in parental controls, location tracking, and parental approval for messaging and call contacts. Announced by phone maker HMD, the firm behind modern Nokia devices, the Fusion X1 has been created in response to new research from the firm, which found that more than half of children have been contacted online by strangers. And you're not shocked, because I'm sure we can remember talking to folks that we didn't have any business talking to. The study, which included a survey of 25,000 children and adults in the UK, US, Germany, India, Australia, and the UAE, also found that 1 in 3 children have been encouraged to take conversations to private platforms, 40% of children have been sent sexual or violent content, and 52% of children felt they were addicted to their screens. In response to this and ongoing concerns about the impact of the digital world on the physical and mental well-being of young people, HMD's Child Safe Phone contains controls that allows parents to decide when and if social media apps are accessible. The built-in controls all include parental approval for contacts, for messaging and calls, a location tracking feature which enables parents to receive alerts when children leave designated safe areas, and a stay focused mode which can block app access during school hours or bedtime, to in partnership with Norwegian tech firms Explora, who make child safe smartwatches and are powered to Explora subscription, which is integrated into the operating system of the phone. HMD said the aim of the device was to provide parents with an alternative to the dilemma many parents face currently, which is to either give their children a fully fledged smartphone and the more unrestricted internet access that comes with it, or to keep their child unconnected. The phone maker has committed to launching 2 devices in 2025 as part of the Better Phone Project, a year-long scheme which has seen the firm work with parents and experts on what to include in a child-friendly device. Smartphones aren't just tech, they shape childhood, family dynamics, and society itself. Few companies are building solutions with children and parents in mind. We are working with parents to do exactly that. The Better Phone Project is proof that change is possible when families, not corporations, lead the conversation. In addition, HMD has confirmed that it will begin rolling out a real-time harm protection feature to its phones built with British cybersecurity firm SafeToNet. It will use AI-powered tools to automatically spot and block harmful content before it reaches the user. This is about giving parents real choices. The HMD Fusion X1 with Explora and technology planned with SafeNet are just the start. Together, we're pushing for a future where kids are empowered to use technology in a safer way, and parents have the tools for added protection and peace of mind. New dedicated phones for young users are becoming increasingly common. I support it.
Yeah.
110%.
I'm childish because I started laughing when you said my kids been sent stuff they weren't supposed to see. I was watching this video from O'Shea Duke Jackson. And this is stupid, y'all.
Who is this person?
He's a YouTuber.
Okay.
So he has like that page, and he got a page called Celebrity Junk. So he do this segment called the Celebrity Junk. It's like just messy, ratchet stuff. And he was talking about this dude was dusty because he sent his ex-girlfriend kids videos of her twerking or something.
Definitely dusty.
He got it. I think he got arrested or something for that. But I was like, yeah, there need to be safeguards. Like there need to be a filter to say, is this safe for a child before the child can actually like view it?
I always say that if you knew what really be going on the internet, just outside of the whole TikTok situations, I mean, like, if you really knew how foul people are, you would make sure that you're protecting your child and the stuff that they're consuming, for real.
Yeah, matter of fact, how many of y'all watching right now have seen First Kid, the movie with Sinbad? Have you seen First Kid?
No. Let me look
I'm gonna be like a dude. Marquise, what year you was born in again?
Let me see. First Kid movie.
In the chat, I know y'all seen
First Kid. Oh, I have seen this. Oh, okay. He was rich, right?
He's a president's son.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, you know, they didn't know that he was on this chat line talking to somebody who he thought was a kid same age as him. And it was a pretty much the former person that was a Secret Service that used to protect him that he was talking to.
Oh, wow.
And he almost ended up like doing something bad to Luke. Yeah. But Sinbad was on him because he didn't trust him. But I mean, that's one of them cultural things too. When it comes to Black people, like if we watching somebody in a certain way, we're going to do some stuff to make sure we stay close and we can know where they are, especially a job like that, because you don't want to get fired on your day off.
Yeah.
Two, it goes into the thing where they tell kids, hey, if you lost, go find you a Black man, because they know the Black man most of the time is going to try to help you find out where your parents are. And that
Black woman going to go off on anybody who pretending like.
And there was a TikTok I saw the other day. It was
seeing a lot of them.
It was a little boy.
Sitting on the bench.
He was either lost or something.
Was it a real one or was it?
It's real. These Black couple, they found a little boy and they called the police and everybody because they're trying to figure out like who does he belong to, and they stay with him and everything.
I'd be seeing the ones where it'd be like that test where someone is like, I don't know you, you know, or and the person is trying to get the kid to come with them to see if the other person is going to like interject or say something or try to defend the kid.
Interested. I want to talk about the Silk Typhoon stuff, and I think we'll probably just get into some TikToks real quick, because the Silk Typhoon was interesting because of how they were going about their attack strategy. Yeah, it's about time to replace this Mac, man. This thing.
It's Mackin?
Yeah, macaroni. How many of y'all listen to Chris and Orange Juice? It's pimping over here. Macaroni.
What's your favorite song on there?
It's gonna be Let Me Down in That Dream. Pedal to the Metal. The money come in, the money go. The same seems to pertain to these corny hoes. Yeah, that's it.
It's either gonna be Never Been or In the Cup. And then followed by that. Honestly, the whole entire thing.
Mesmerize is like,
Mesmerize at the beginning.
We
don't chase
them, we duck them.
Yeah.
That, hey, you know what? I might listen to
Cause Say She OJ. Never Been. That was my song.
Matter of fact, that came out in my senior year, high school.
It was. No, it wasn't mine. It was like my sophomore, junior year.
Yeah, that was. I'm not even like a big Wiz listener, but that was an era.
Yeah. That was an era.
Everybody started wearing Chucks.
And the little
Taylor gang.
The little patch.
The light. Yeah, with the fro.
He did his big one.
As you say, 8 down. Okay. Microsoft warns that Chinese cyber espionage threat group Silk Typhoon has shifted its tactics, now targeting remote management tools and cloud services in supply chain attacks that give them access to downstream customers. The tech giant has confirmed breaches across multiple industries, including government, IT services, healthcare, defense, education, NGOs, and energy. Silk Typhoon exploit unpatched applications that allow them to elevate their access in targeted organizations and conduct further malicious activities. After successfully compromising a victim, Silk Typhoon uses the stolen keys and credentials to infiltrate customer networks, where they can then abuse a variety of deployed applications, including Microsoft services and others, to achieve their espionage objectives. Silk Typhoon storms IT supply chains. Silk Typhoon is a Chinese state-sponsored espionage group known for hacking the U.S. Office of Foreign Assets Control's office in early December 2024 and stealing data from the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States, CFIUS. All right, so who wasn't doing a job, or was it an inside job? Because I always feel like stuff like that, they so tight-knit. How do you hack that? And these supposed to be the best of the best people that work at these jobs, allegedly. Microsoft reports that Silk Typhoon switched tactics around that period, abusing stolen API keys and compromised credentials for IT providers, identity management, privileged access management, and RMM solutions, which are then used to access downstream customer networks and data. Microsoft says the attackers can scan GitHub repositories and other public resources to locate leaked authentication keys or credentials and then use them to breach environments. The threat actors are also known for using password spray attacks to gain access to valid credentials. Previously, the threat actors were primarily leveraging zero-day and end-day flaws in public-facing edge devices to gain initial access, plant web shells, and then move laterally via compromised VPNs and RDPs. Switching from organization-level breaches to MSP-level hacks allows the attackers to move within cloud environments, stealing Active Directory sync credentials and abusing OAuth applications for a much stealthier attack. The threat actors no longer rely on malware and web shells with Silk Typhoon, now exploiting cloud apps to steal data and then clear logs, leaving only a minimal trace behind. That's what them people with Taylor Swift supposed to do.
Bye. They left every trace behind.
They supposed to make some type of email that ain't even connected to them. So send the money there.
Used her personal
offshore account. Deactivate everything and go live with Russell Simmons. According to Microsoft's observations, Silk Typhoon continues to exploit vulnerabilities alongside its new tactics, sometimes at 0 days for initial access. Most recently, the threat group was observed exploiting a critical Ivanti Pulse Connect VPN privilege escalation flaw, CVE-2025-0282, as a zero-day to breach corporate networks. Earlier in 2024, Silk Typhoon exploited CVE-2024-3400, a command injection vulnerability in Palo Alto Networks Global Protect, and CVE-2023-3519, remote code execution flaw in Citrix NetScaler ADC and NetScaler Gateway. Microsoft says the threat actors have created a covert network consisted of compromised CyberRoam appliances, Zixel routers, and QNAP devices, which are used to launch attacks and obfuscate malicious activities. Microsoft has listed updated indicators of compromise and detection rules that reflect Silk Typhoon's latest shift in tactics at the bottom of its report, and defenders are recommended to add the available information to their security tools to detect and block any attacks timely. And this is why it's important to have a good threat intel team, because they will keep you abreast of all this knowledge, because that's their job.
I also think that it's important for, because it's a lot of credential-based attacks, so you need to make sure that you're following guidance for protecting your identities. Like, a lot of companies, like the NIST guidance is that you're using a solution to monitor for passwords that have been leaked. So if you're not, then how do you know? Yeah. You have to, it's not a given, right? You're not going to know if you're not hooked up or paying for a service.
That's the thing.
Or you know, using something to give you this list. Cause if you don't have, you know, folks on your team who can do that and go pull, you know, top 500 bad passwords or whatever the case may be, then how are you protecting yourself from credential-based attacks outside of we use an MFA?
Yeah, that and people are leaving keys and stuff in the GitHubs and they're finding them.
Lock the keys up in the vault. Put the keys in the vault.
And they just don't have stuff even configured correctly.
That too.
A lot of time. So
it is easy, to be fair, to misconfigure stuff in the cloud resources because you spin stuff up so quick and then you decommission stuff so quick. But that's why you also need a solution that's monitoring your configurations.
You get a Wiz as a cloud service. It's a CSPM or some whatever Wiz stands for. But you get a service like Wiz, and then you do have an actual SOC IR team. So they are noticing, hey, this bucket is public. It shouldn't be public. They're noticing hey, a root user did this or a successful API call. So they're seeing all this stuff in real time. And then that's when they respond to it to make sure, hey, y'all testing, you delete this, what this is.
That's how
you need to rotate y'all credentials, all these things. So that's why everything's a lot of times does start with that first line of defense, as well as making sure you have adequate rules and that they make sense for people and you're staying updated on what people are doing to get access to people's environments. And something that we talked about earlier that I forgot to mention is tech bro type stuff. There is a difference between the theory of you studying cybersecurity versus actually being a practitioner. For example, a guy in one of my TikTok comments was critiquing, he wasn't really critiquing one of my guests, but they were explaining like how they got their first job and like they didn't know like everything, but they just started listing out like what happens like on the internet, and they started listing stuff from the OSI model. and they tried to nitpick their answer. And granted, at the time they said it, they had really just found out about cyber. But that's not the point. The person was trying to be real smart. It's like, well, what if you find a threat at the transport layer, or how are they supposed to identify a threat at the transport layer? And I was like,
what is this, an interview?
I don't even say that. I said, my boy, they got tools to identify threats at the transport layer. Nobody is in cyberspace looking at it's on the transport layer. Nobody is doing that. The tools are doing that. Most of the time it's going to come into you more reactive
in terms of
to check it out. And then if something starts happening over and over again, that's a trend. That's when you start figuring out, okay, is this a flyby scan or what are we seeing in our environment? So you got you got Akamai, you got Cloudflare, you got Zscaler, like all these different companies, they got these different services to protect a lot of your internet facing apps from all these different threats. So I just want to say, like, y'all stop trying to be so smart in the comments, man, and just pay attention to your own grind or whatever. Like, you know, if you were like you say you were, you wouldn't have to prove it, and you'd have a job where you'd be running your own company. A lot of y'all lot. So I just want to say that.
I want to double back on that, though, what you just said about theory versus like that working knowledge. And that's why it's important to not just read, but to also do and start to, you know, use these tools and understand how to use them versus you just reading the documentation about how the tool works, what features it has, what's the capabilities, but can you actually use the tool in a live environment? I think that also, piggybacking off what you said, that'll help you get a lot further than just, oh yeah, I know what that is, I know what it does. All right, well, what will you do if this circumstance happened? How are you going to respond using the tool? And you would know because you would have had your hands on that tool before.
Not as facts, though. Let me see. Is that a TikTok you sent me to play?
No, I forgot. That was something.
Oh, yeah. You didn't want me to play this one?
I don't remember what it
was. That's the dude, Deontay, the Grits and Eggs podcast.
That's the one I was, I was just trying to tell you about his name.
Oh, yeah. I've been listening to his podcast. Yeah.
When we were talking earlier, I couldn't remember what the name of it was.
Yeah, he had the, are you familiar with the woman, Gigi LaFleur?
Is that the light-skinned girl?
She has to be doing like the rap and stuff like that?
Yes, yeah.
It was a video where this dude was walking. And he said his knee or something hurt, and he was talking. She was like, "What you been doing?" And it was showed him with some Jabos, dancing the snap music. And I tagged Deontay and Gigi LaFleur, and then she actually responded to that comment. So that was pretty funny to me because they was talking about Jabos on the episode I was listening to. If you had a pair of Jabos, put a two in the chat.
Two here. I had some.
You had some Bose?
What?
I couldn't afford no Bose.
I had a couple pair.
You had money. I couldn't afford no Bose.
I had some pink ones, and I had some shorts. That was fire. They had a little pop. They were shorts, but not. They was everything. Actually, I gotta find that picture. But yeah, I had some pink ones that looked like what we wear today, like the little cargos. They looked like that. Pockets everywhere, strings everywhere.
I know the young kids are like, man, what are they talking about? These are Jabos. These are Jabos. Let me click on the one that's Jabos. These joints right here, and all these are Jabos. Now. People start doing extra stuff with these, but the typical Jabos was like these joints and these right here. Well, we wore them out. See, I could barely afford
where you put them?
I thought it was on the screen.
Mm-mm.
It is on the screen.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on the screen. Now, back in the day, I could barely pay my $86.85 for my low-top Air Forces. So, like I said, you had money.
Yeah, actually, the ones that I had, they kind of looked like that middle pair, but they were hot pink. Like, they were literally hot pink. Yeah.
Check you out. Let me see. What was one I said we had to play? Oh, this was a good one. This reminds me of what we started off with.
I got laid off 2 months after getting a significant raise. A raise that came with wording like, "We hope this will convince you to be here for the long haul." 2 months later. Gone. I have people still today who reach out to remind me that even though this happened in November, it was absolute junk. Executives at this company were mad that I was let go, even though they were the decision makers. I had literally hit every goal given to me, succeeded on levels unexpected in the role. So why am I telling you all of this? As a bit of a reminder of a few things. One, your layoff has very little to do with you. You have to remember that. I say it all the time, but it's worth remembering. And two, the things that people say to you at work about how good you're doing mean nothing. Now, maybe nothing's the wrong word, because if you're there and you're getting raises and you're succeeding, obviously it means something to do well. But there is no long-term promise. You are who you need to look out for. You, your family, your loved ones, your inner circle. The decisions you make, the jobs you take, the moves you make in your career, that needs to be your top priority. Do not ever feel guilty about prioritizing you and your circle first.
That's facts, though. Like T.O. said, I love me some me.
That part.
You got to love yourself out here in the job market and always try to figure out how to move as the best way you can, which is tough. And what's the other one we was laughing at? Because they can't laugh at the other one because they got to see the video to laugh at it.
The one you played at first?
The one with the dude was like, when you become a manager, he said, man, you 43, dog.
You definitely need to see
you had 42 years to celebrate your birthday. I'm going to read it out to you. So the video says, I ain't gonna put this on the screen because I'm going to have to change the rating of the video. I might put it in the Discord. So y'all join the Discord and I'll put some of the stuff that I'm not going to play on here. The phones. I used to have a Dion joint.
I'd never owned a pair, but I would still get a pair today just to
with
have
the phones?
A pair. Yeah. Nice little jogging suit vibe.
I need to bring them Dion's back.
What is them?
Dion Sanders Nikes? I thought this was a good one too, right here.
People who are really good at interviewing understand that companies don't hire skills, they hire solutions to problems. Most people's goal in an interview is to showcase what they've done. But great interviewers, they shift it from here's what I've done to here's how I can help you win.
And I want to pause it right there because that's a major one.
That's what I mean by telling the story on what you're capable of or what you've accomplished. You can't just put the job description of what you do on your resume. That is not it.
Well, even let's go further to preparing for the interview. And that's why you need to take your notes.
And I mean for each interview.
Right. Each interview, take notes on what the recruiter is telling you. Hey, why is this role important? Why is it open? What initiatives are something that they're trying to do? That way you can go study and figure out, okay, I need to have answers to these when I talk to the hiring manager, when I talk to the technical people. Because if you got answers to the issues they have, or you got stories that can showcase you solving these problems, you got it in the bag. And that's why I was telling someone, and we were talking through there on Twitter, I had seen her saying like how they gave up on LinkedIn and some other stuff. And so I just want to kind of figure out, hey, you know, what type of job search issues are you facing and some of this other stuff? One, because I just want to see what was going on. And two, that helps me make content for y'all and also for my clients. I make specialized videos for them addressing some stuff that they might not had mentioned to me. And funny enough, I was saying, hey, if you're getting to the final round and not getting an offer, sometimes what may be happening is you don't have those stories to tie over or something that you don't have skill set wise. I'm going to say those two being unbiased.
And I also think that for some people, it may be difficult for you to know what you're doing in your current role and how the successes you're having in your current role can translate to a good story on your resume. Because you could be doing a lot of different things, but if you're not telling the actual story of what they are looking for, or something that they can relate to in terms of impact, then it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's facts. And you know what's funny? I got one article that's in the freaking title that I didn't even cover. And I just thought
there's another
it.
What?
The thing about the 25K T-Mobile.
Oh, duh. That was the title.
Let me see. I'm just gonna read it. I'm not gonna share it. It's all it says is don't be surprised if you receive $25,000 from T-Mobile in April. And basically it's saying payments will start going out soon to T-Mobile customers affected by the 2021 breach. A cyber attack revealed in August 2021 that exposed sensitive information such as names, addresses, you know, pretty much PII of nearly 76 million U.S. customers. So the company agreed in 2022 to pay $350 million to settle the claim brought against it by customers whose personal information was compromised, and they blame T-Mobile for not adequately protecting the information. And I ain't gonna lie, if you check right now, T-Mobile actually hiring for a lot of security positions and they paying some good money, but they want you to come in 4 days a week.
Is it one here?
Yeah, in Frisco.
I bet the office is nice.
It might be, but 4 days a week, it's a lot. Unless you stay right next to the office. If you were with the company in 2021 and believe that you were impacted, you are eligible for a slice of the class action settlement. The settlement is not an admission of wrongdoing, but this is the route that companies take to avoid lengthy court trials. They definitely did wrong.
What?
That's like Diddy saying, hey, I paid, but I went wrong, though.
What?
If you're a class member, someone impacted by the breach, it doesn't matter if you didn't file a lawsuit separately. Class members were previously notified of the proposed settlement. So if you are one or more than 76 million T-Mobile customers affected by the breach, there are no further steps to take. And you can confirm that by calling this number that I'm not going to read out to y'all. I'm trying to find what they talk about. So customers who incurred out-of-pocket losses or spent money due to the breach should expect to receive up to $25,000. If you spent time on remedying fraud, identity theft, or alleged misuse of your personal information that you believe is fairly traceable to the breach, you should expect to be reimbursed at a rate of $25 per hour or your hourly wage if you took time off work.
They're aggravating me right now because what? And what? People don't even know. People don't even know that they have to go in and not only be like, oh, I was affected, but look, I was affected and I had to do this, this, and this. They're still getting out.
Yeah.
They're still getting out.
They should just pay all. Yeah. They should just pay everybody.
Everybody that was affected.
At least 5 G's.
Because they know who was affected. Mm-hmm. Now they basically is like, all right, we'll pay y'all, but if you ain't tell us the specifics and when, most people aren't going to get that 25.
Right, because like customers who didn't claim out-of-pocket losses or lost time will likely receive $25 or $100 if they reside in California on August 1st.
That's not funny, but like that's a joke.
Nah, for real.
Like, for real, for real.
Now, that's big facts, though. And let me see. Let me finish the rest of what Buddy said.
To do that, you have to understand the problems that the company or the team that you're interviewing with is facing. And companies don't put that in job descriptions. They're not going to say, hey, we're really struggling with this and we don't know what to do about it. So you have to be deliberate about trying to find the pain that is actually being felt and figuring out how your skill set and what you bring to the table can alleviate that pain. This starts even before you get an interview. Reach out to members, let them know you apply. And ask the main challenges that they're facing. Ask the recruiter during the screening call, hey, tell me a little bit more about why the team opened up the role. Is it just a headcount resource thing? Or are there specific problems that they don't know how to tackle and they're looking for someone who does? Be ready when you sit down with that hiring manager to be able to speak to not just your skill set, but how your skills fix their problems.
That ate down, though.
That's facts, though. Like,
and those are not typical questions that they're going to expect to receive from somebody that's interviewing. So hey, that's a good way to stand out.
The better the questions you are in more detail, the better you stand out, at least on a short term. Is something going on my Discord? Let's see. Oh, well. Now, I think this other one was a big one because a lot of times people say somebody reached out to them, a recruiter or something, they want to know what they currently made. And I'm going to play this first and then we can talk about it more. It's got 1 million views on TikTok.
The candidate told us he's making 50K at his current job, but he's hoping for 60. I know we had this position budgeted for 75K, but now we can put the rest towards something else. We sent him an offer for 57K. I'll let you know where we end up. When an interviewer asks, what are your salary expectations? Do not give them a number. Human psychology in an interview makes people want to answer this question directly. But if you do this, you jeopardize lowballing yourself and setting your negotiation ceiling too low. The last thing you want to do is tell them you would take 60 grand when they could go as high as 75. Instead, when they ask you what your salary expectations are, you say, it's important that I know a range before I can move forward. The key is to get them to say their number or range first, making sure that you don't lowball yourself later. The candidate told us he's...
That's facts, though. It's a lot of different ways you can answer that. So one way you can politely tell the recruiter is, hey, I need to learn more about this role before I want to give a range. You can do your research and look at what the role pays. Beforehand. So you can try to see if you want to live with your number. And because a lot of times I made a TikTok of this too. I was like, a lot of times the reason why they ain't posted what the salary is because they know they lowballing.
That part. Because when the salary is there, it be posted. The range.
Yeah.
I feel like you should post the range. Stop wasting people's time.
But I'll tell you this, even the range, now being an experienced person, when you're helping people with jobs or you've been talking to a lot of recruiters, you'd be like, hey, it's the range y'all got posted, the real range, or what's your ideal target?
Yeah, it'd be specific.
So I asked, like, hey, what's your ideal targeted amount? Because that'll cut through all the BS. I'm like, ah, that's too low. And I was saying, this was in my layout video I just made. What was that, last week? I was like, you got to be confident in walking away sometimes with something that's too low and not just trying to take something just to take something. Because what people don't realize is sometimes your last salary will help you negotiate your next one. You may be too scared to ask for $175,000 if your last job only paid you $95,000 and the job is well within paying that amount of money you want. But because you're scared of it, because you're scared to ask for the money. So get as much as you can, because we've seen in this job market, like, nothing is for certain. Like, you could be working one day and the next day,
gone.
Hey, budget cuts. We're reducing headcount. Like, so that's something you can. Ice out on Destiny, Kirsten.
One of my, right out of school, desperate, really about to accept anything, is how I was feeling. Like, I just need to get some experience. Went in and did an interview, and, you know, we were talking through the base. And she asked me something, and my number was like so low. It was definitely below 70. And then she was a black lady, and she was like, girl, the salary for this role is $156,000. And I just got quiet, because I didn't even know. I wasn't even ready for, I couldn't even get my thoughts together after I knew that I messed up when I said that, but I did appreciate her telling me I wasn't qualified for the role anyway. But that was like, oh my God, what? I didn't even ask for half of what they got. It's crazy. It's crazy. So do not lowball yourself at all. Take some time to think about it before you know, and if they're trying to pressure you, then that might not be, that might be a red flag.
Another way you can actually figure this out is go to your company's website, go to career site, see what they got open, and see if they got the job salaries posted there. And so if they do, you can start seeing if it's the same role or similar to what you do, and you look at the levels. Hey, this either more than what I'm getting. I need to go to HR and get a comp adjustment. And they'll assess your comp based on the market research and your experience and everything you accomplished. And a lot of times, sometimes if it's a good company, they'll boost your pay. Mm-hmm. I've had it happen to me when I worked at one of my old companies. I was like, hey, I need a comp adjustment.
I actually just heard about that like in the last 6 months. I didn't even know that was a thing.
I didn't either. I forgot what made me ask about
it. But it's only if your comp isn't where, you know, it should be.
I forgot what made me ask about it in 2021.
How was the process for you?
Easy. My manager, I was a value to the team. So I used to get like anything I used to ask for. Mm-hmm. Like before remote work was really a thing, I was already approved to like work remote because I had to handle some business. And every year she would give me the highest she could for a raise. So like I used to get like close to 10% raises every year instead of that, you know, 3-5%. So I was
a lot of money. Yeah. For real.
But it was funny, right after I got the raise, I ended up going to GS. So I was like, it is what it is. That's what set the next trajectory of like, okay, I want to do this. Or I've been interviewing. So like, it's beneficial to interview and talk to all these other different places just to figure out what's in the market. Like, stay interviewing so you can stay sharp with your skills. Like, a lot of people stop interviewing, and that's where they mess up at.
And then you got to go through a few rounds before you get your feet on solid ground, because you haven't did an interview in who knows how many years.
Yeah, man, I be hearing some people too. Like, that's the thing that I work on too.
Interviewing is a skill.
It's a skill.
It's not something that it's a muscle. You got to work.
You got to work with it. You got to be aware of not talking too much, not answering direct questions, all different type of things.
And I feel like once you've experienced a not so great work environment, the way you approach an interview and wanting to know about the team and the leadership and the culture, you approach that a lot differently, because you know what you don't want and you know what you do want.
Facts. These are some good ones right here. He was saying, asking good questions shows you're paying attention to, not just going through the motions.
Agreed.
That's why I tell everybody to have a notebook. Just have your notebook where you can showcase, hey, I got these questions right now. And they see you reading your questions, they're going to take a note of that. Came prepared. Thoughtful questions that make sense. Ask questions that align with the company's values. Like
that, or even dive into the job duties. Ask specific questions about
a typical day-to-day.
Make them get back with you because they don't know.
Yeah. a lot of times they do that. Ask them about a typical day. Or like I like to tell people, hey, research their news and their blog, see what type of press releases they just did. Hey, y'all, I just noticed y'all just this acquisition. What you think it's gonna mean for the company?
That's a question right there.
The interview process goes both ways. I'm interviewing the company while they think they're interviewing me. No, that's facts. It's two way.
Yep.
It's two way. Just like, you know, dates and everything else, it should be two ways.
And don't get fooled by the person that's interviewing you either and think that, oh, they cool. Because that's not likely the person that you're going to be working with on the team, especially if it's like your first interview. You might hit it off with the recruiter or the hiring or the recruiter, right? That's the, wait, who's it?
Recruiter, and then typically hiring manager, then technical with somebody on the team.
Yeah.
And then...
But like the first couple people you speak with may not be those that you're directly interacting with. So don't get too comfortable and, oh yeah, they cool, because it could be not that.
Yeah. And I'll let you solo real quick because I want to talk about something funny that happened to me in my LinkedIn messages. And it was hilarious to me because it was like a person's way of them asking me for a referral or trying to ask somebody that I think, I don't know if I was connected with for a referral. And I was like,
why did somebody DM me and say something like, hey, can you help me with the hookup? What? Don't know you like that at all. And that's not how you approach any ask. But while you're looking for that,
I found it.
Okay, cool.
I'm not going to say this person's name, but he said, hey, Unri, good morning. Question, are you close with, and this, I'm just going to say blank, they have some open cyber positions that are open on their website. Because my employer uses their product, BD, whatever it is, with me troubleshooting their software regularly, I was told by doctors to apply. Can you ask blank if I can list his email? This way, if an offer is made, he can get a bonus. So I was really trying to figure out.
What does that even mean?
I was like, are you trying to see if I know this person so they can refer you?
But why do they need their email? They just need the referral. They don't understand the process. Clearly.
They try to.
And the doctors told them to apply? What doctor?
Oh, this was Monday, and they tried to send me the link to the profile, but they didn't send it right. So I was never able to view the profile, but I was like,
You got to have some etiquette. And if you don't know, ChatGPT it, because you have to, that first of all, you're asking someone for a favor. You're asking someone to go into their network to help you do something. And who are you? And why would I do that for you?
Right.
That's like the big thing. And that's not even gatekeeping, but like, truly, who are you? I don't even know you to vouch for you. You didn't approach me. I don't, you know, like, it's 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Somebody just said, why not just talk to blank? I was like, no, that's facts though. But did you have any movie stuff you want to leave the people with?
No, I've been dry. I haven't really been watching movies. I've been watching The Cosby Show.
What have I been watching? You heard what the stuff I was watching. I thought about Roll Bounce, one of my all-time favorite movies. When he said, hey, Diana Ross called. Your mama said, what she said? Your mama want a wig back or something like that. What did he say? That whole movie funny. He told that man his hair so nappy when he comes, it sounds like he biting an apple.
I'm trying to think of a good, yeah, nope, nothing. I'm blanking today.
You are?
On a movie quote.
I'm trying to think of if it's anyone. Like, everything always comes to mind is like Rush Hour, Major Pain.
Have you seen Double Platinum? I don't know why, but I'm
talking about what
Brandy and Diana Ross.
Diana
Ross was her.
I think I saw it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah,
That reminds me. Recently, I watched 17 again.
17 again always gonna hit. It's a good movie.
Yeah, that's a Disney classic for you right there. And I did actually get the girls to sit down and watch a Goofy movie the other night.
I was definitely a Disney fan when I was younger, watching all of that. Mm-hmm. There was a Nickelodeon show. I can't think of the name of it right now, though. A little cartoon.
That's a good question. And then I wanted to like end the podcast. Kind of like not, I forgot, but like it's been such a crazy week, man. To RIP, man, to one of my good childhood friends, Daryl Ware. You will be missed, bro. That was like some crazy news to get last weekend and find out like he passed, just came out of nowhere. Talking about one of like the smartest guys I know, had a master's, had an MPH from Cornell University. I think it was like only like 30 or 31. Had a full life ahead of him. So I say that to say, like, if it's somebody you ain't talked to in a long time, because physically we hadn't really talked about like a couple of years, like on the phone or texted, and we hadn't seen each other in like 5 years, but somebody you ain't seen or somebody you wonder how they doing, they talk to in a minute, man, give them a call, whatever. If y'all ain't beefed out, give them a call and just check on them, see how they doing. I mean, you never know when the next time you'll see them, you know, if it's the last time. So that's all I'll leave the podcast with. Y'all know how to find us. I appreciate everybody for rocking with us tonight. And until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.